Go ahead.
Okay. Roy, you know, we had sort of discussed this yesterday. Can you give us a very brief update on Jed's situation, where you want to go, what you view as next steps, informational purposes, and discussion among the board?
Yeah. So, in some of the previous meetings, I told you we had some problems with him and misuse of the truck. Thought about it for a long time about what to do with him, and then just kind of watched how he responded to and things that he's supposed to do. And it just feels like that we've had to almost have an ankle bracelet on him to keep him working and kind of babysitting. And that's been a problem. He's done a lot better lately, but it's because he knows that we know where he's at every second, where the truck's at, and all that kind of stuff. It's frustrating because I don't particularly want to be babysitting somebody. You really got to be the guy up there that just goes out and does things. So I've mulled over it every single night for the last week or so, and we've got to do something this week. But we wanted to wait till this meeting, make sure there was kind of no pushback or whatever, but my intention was to let him go before his 6 months probation's up. It's easier to do. I'm frustrated that we have to start over and figure this out again. We do have Evan who would step in on a contract basis, and that's kind of why we preserve that relationship, is he would still take care of an awful lot of stuff. That's why I've gone out after Aqua Environmental Services to give us that as a backup also in case we need somebody to help us in our regulatory issues. So my recommendation is to let him go. And probably do it tomorrow or the next day. but there's just been a number of things that he just hasn't done, and he's done. Most recent was that the railing on the side of the truck was gone. I go, hey, where'd that railing go? Well, I took it off because to get my pants dirty. He's like, why would you do that? And so I said, put it back on. We should be taking stuff off the trucks. I think he tore it off. He just didn't want to tell me. So I told him about 10 times, put the rail back on that truck, the step boards, and he just refused to do it. That's mainly probably damaged and doesn't want to, but it's just like that. I just don't want to have to babysit him. Should be on things, doing them, and keep on top of things. There's a number of others. We've written him up, sent him a notice, called him in, gave him a 3 pages worth of here's things you aren't doing and didn't do, and the whole list of where you left the truck and all that. So. Good enough reason. We've had a notice out for a new employee for
6 months.
Yeah. Looking just as a second employee plus somebody to possibly replace him. There's not much out there, I'm telling you. Not much. I don't know, maybe Mark, you probably deal with that trying to get employees too.
Yeah.
I don't know where you find yours, because you hire a lot more than we ever would.
Yeah, well, we also have lower standards when it comes to our seasonal employees. It's basically we have a false start.
I'm beginning to think I go down there on the street down here and see if we can get somebody to come work. Okay. But, there are people. Mark suggested I contact somebody at Roy City who is a water sewer operator. I know he is an incredible kid, who's just a hard worker, but he couldn't convince his wife to make the jump. So that didn't work out either. And I don't know if there's a nepotism problem. Carrie's husband's an incredible worker. He'd be glad to come to work, but... the law allows it, as long as you can't find anybody else, you get somebody that's qualified, but I don't know how the board would ever feel about that. But either way, I'm suggesting that we terminate Jed and start finding somebody else, one way or the other. And we use that.
Blake, are there any legal steps we need to take? I mean, Evan, you had to go to his house, meet Willie, give him a letter, pay him money. Is there anything you see that we need to do with Jed?
No, Jed's still in his probationary period, so if you're going to let him go, now is the time to let him go while he's in his probationary period. It doesn't mean that he won't try to claim unemployment, or it doesn't mean... But now is the time to do it if you're going to do it. Waiting 2 weeks to allow him to get out of his probationary period and then terminating would be an unwise decision.
Okay. I support Roy in this. How do the other board members feel?
I support him also. I think we need to get the snowmobile back and
just all our equipment that we provided him.
So the way he's been doing that, we've ensured that. And that's, again, that was the reason to put the building up there and as fast as we did, is that to give us a place to put all of our equipment. So we got it out of Jed's house, out of Evan's house, and out of Greg's Chambers' place. So we gathered up all of our stuff and put it in one central location. Mike's been kind enough to allow us to put the one ton up on his property, and we'll do that here shortly if that's okay. And then we'll get the snowmobile, and I park it next to it up there. Maybe it's a safe spot to just leave a snowmobile. I don't know. Too many people bother things up there, do they?
Not really.
So, but everything else will be housed in that building for the short term. And then long term, again, got to look for a permanent home for things. But
okay.
So anyway, so I'll, I just want to make sure you knew there wasn't any pushback on it, that that's what I was going to do. It's not going to make... Life can be harder for me for a little while, trying to cover bases on both parts and help Evan out, but we have to do this. It's, we've got to have the right people up there. No matter how we do it, we've got to have good workers take care of us.
Is it possible to identify a retiring employee from, say, one of the cities around here, like Roy or Hooper or something like that, and offer them a job? I mean...
Could be. Yeah, I mean, it's...
I mean, they normally don't look for jobs, you know, right off the bat since they're retiring, but if they had an opportunity, perhaps they would take it up. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, if we could talk to the HR manager at, you know, I'm sure you know the HR people at every town, city, and village in the county here.
Yeah,
so it might be worthwhile.
Yeah,
good suggestion.
We've had the notice out from the Special Districts Association, American Water Works,
state website, Facebook,
Indeed.
Yeah, everywhere.
It's out there, like, yeah, it's crazy.
If you make the contact at Weaver Tech, I mean, we've gotten a couple of good employees out of their programs as well. So if you have someone that's, you know, kind of going through motors and controls or whatever is out there that would be valuable to us, they might be someone that you might be able to...
It's a great idea. Great idea.
Yeah. So any feelings about having somebody like Kara's husband? Do you feel like it's too close, too much nepotism? What's your feelings there?
I have a lot of personal bias against it just because I've had a horrible experience with it, so...
I think it's not an optimal situation.
Yeah. Perfect.
I can say that categorically.
That's okay.
No, my husband's got two jobs. It's no big deal. He's got two job offers, so he was just willing to come and help. Yeah. So it's not a big deal.
Yeah. So we'll take those ideas and keep looking until we find somebody.
Are there contract services out
there? Yeah, keep us posted.
They would do this as well? Or
I think you have the support you need.
Yeah, actually, this Aqua Environmental actually has crews and people that come and do things. We're quite a ways away from most everybody.
Yeah,
it's a big problem.
Yeah, I guess that's a problem.
But they actually do run systems, entire systems, and you don't.
It might be worth getting a bid just to understand what the cost differential looks like.
Good idea.
If there's a company that could provide the service, I bet your point's well taken. That I think the response time is going to be slow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. When I talk to Rob Thomas, he has himself, and then he has an employee, and then he has the Aqua guys come in, I think twice a week, to go down to the sewage plant and do their whatever they do down there, their magic at the sewage plant.
So we kind of considered maybe the same thing also, that they as you come in, they come in and do water samples, any other, you know, flushing cleanings, whatever we do. Make sure we meet any state requirements, and then we'd have somebody on board to just go take care of those small items.
Yeah.
But that might be more economical.
Okay.
To operate that way. Yeah.
So as a separate closed session item, if we're prepared to move forward, is everybody good on this personnel issue with Jed?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And just so people know that not every closed session issue is bad news bears from home. Roy Watts is essentially the lifeblood of our organization. We wouldn't be advancing without him. We couldn't do without him. He had his annual performance evaluation that Jim Harvey and Ron participated in. And Ron, I'm going to leave it to you to kind of take it from here. what we need at the end of this discussion is a consensus on advancing Roy's salary from his current position of $73,000 to $108,000. Importantly, Roy was offered initially $108,000 when he first took his when he was first offered a job, but he, and this absolutely demonstrates his character and integrity, he refused that offer, saying that the district couldn't afford to pay that, and he wanted to prove his worth before he would take any more money. So the sort of consensus and where I've landed on this is that we should offer Roy $108,000 a year retroactive to his one-year anniversary date. So, Ron, can you help us?
Yeah, I can help you. That's a little change from what we agreed to, but...
Okay, I'm sorry, then I didn't misunderstood it. Please help me understand it, then.
Okay, yeah. We, Jim and I sat down with Roy, and we did not have goals that we, no one established goals for Roy, and so we, what we did is we reviewed his job description, and, you know, it's pretty obvious that he's doing a superb job, and... And Jim and I agreed that we needed to increase his compensation. Roy came in with a number, and typical of Roy, it was under what we wanted to pay Roy. And knowing that, you know, he is, like Bob said, he took an enormous cut in salary because he felt that, you know, the district couldn't afford it. We still can't afford it, but doesn't matter. We're going to pay it, okay? So we came up with the $108,000, and that $108,000, Bob, would be effective the first pay period after the review that we had. Okay, so that was the date, not going back to the 1 year point. Wasn't that what we agreed to?
I was thinking it was the date that we talked.
It was the date we talked.
Okay, so whatever that was.
Whatever that was.
Yeah.
We said whatever is the closest pay period, you know, to get you started, mm-hmm. making it easy for the accountants.
Yeah.
Okay, and then at the same time, and because he was offered 108, and there were some differences in benefits and things like that, but we decided that 108 was where we were landing, and Roy seemed genuinely pleased with that, mm-hmm. and he felt it was a fair compensation, and clearly he's demonstrated that he's worth that amount of money and even more, okay? So the things that we ask Roy to provide us are his goals and objectives for next year. And so we need to get those written and get them down so he can be evaluated against those next year. And the other thing that we asked was goals for the district for, what was it, and 15 years, mm-hmm. I think. 1, 5, and 15 years. So we can lay out goals, and at least we can discuss those. And Roy said that he could draft some, put them together, and present them to the board.
Yeah, so we actually...
It's in your packet.
Yeah, we typed up some stuff to put in there. It'll show you the to-do list that we've...
It's in the very back.
...that we've had
uh-huh.
for 2018. And most of that stuff we've completed. And also 2018, 2019... That's the next set of goals, and you can kind of see where we're at on that and the progress. And then we had the projects that I know that had to be done. Some of these were when I first started, showing some of their values, and when we thought those are, as far as I'm concerned for the district, those are my goals, where I want us to be. All these to-do lists are goals
uh-huh.
of mm-hmm. what I know has to happen in those years, and then... And then there's a capital maintenance plan, and that's just mostly the items. Now I'm going to take this, and actually I have one more Actually, we condensed these. It was like a book.
Yeah, it was
to do
20
this like
pages.
This, and we just condensed them into things that were very much similar. But so with this and with some other prioritized items I've got, I'll take those to Mark Miller, and we'll actually put those down as the capital maintenance plans, and then we'll update the capital facilities plan, and that gives you your 5, 10, 15, 20-year plans and your goals. Plus, as I talked to Carrie, I know she's got a number of things she's doing, and we'll list those also, so that internally as a business you'll have them, but those relate to things that I'll be doing and working on also. And that way you can look through the list and see what we're getting done, if we're actually accomplishing those. So those, it's a to-do list, but they are goals, is what they are.
Okay.
And then as we look at the capital projects, as we complete that document, we'll bring that back to you and let the board take time like they should as a long-term planning organization. And you'll look at those capital projects and see what they I like and what they'll cost, and then we'll start putting that together with ways of funding it, how we're going to raise that money, taxes, water assessments, whatever it takes. And between the goals or to-do list, and hopefully those will become the goals and to-do list of the board also, so we want to make sure the board buys into all of that. And then we figure out the funding of it, and then that determines whether we're going to borrow money, fund it internally, or how it's going to be paid for, and what and over what duration of time, whether it's 20 years or whatever. So it's a bigger business plan. And then also I'll provide more information also on the internal and external operations. So we talked about staffing. There'll be a time when you'll still need one more secretary in here, one more clerk, whatever that job is. You'll still need at some point two people taking care of a system, whatever that ends up being. And so it'll look 20 years down the road with number of homes and all that. But anyway, it's a much, much bigger plan than this quick review I have. I can see about where we need to be in 20 years, but I'll have that pretty well defined in the next little while. I've talked to Mark Miller about it already, and I'll need his expertise in saying, here's what's going to cost to get these things done. And he'll run his estimates on it, and we'll create all the charts and maps and everything. So when I bring that back, it'll be something enough that you can hold on to it and have a plan that you start working through for the next 20 years.
Okay, but your personal goals for 2019, I guess, mm-hmm. for the next year,
yeah.
they are...
Well, most of the time, if I'm thinking about what, if we want from me personally, just me personally.
So what we're going to evaluate your performance on, because like if I look at Water Rights Don Barnett, I don't know what the hell that means. You know, I don't mm-hmm. know if you could amplify, if I guess is what I'm asking, and give us a little bit more what you're going to do with those water rights or get them approved or
okay.
or Mike, it says Mike Moyle Aspen property in progress. For the life of me, I don't know what the heck that is, but if you could give me what you're going to yeah. do with Mike Moyle or you know what you plan or mm-hmm. your goal is for the year, then that would help me. If does that make sense to you, Bob?
You know, I don't want to get too granular on this. I want to get water out of that Kobe Pizzelle Springs disaster. You know, I see the value in pre-planning, and a brief overview that Roy's providing I think is sufficient. This is a moving development, and I have enough confidence that Roy will stick to individual bullet points without detracting from other things that he could be doing in real time by getting too granular on a planning diagram. That's just who I am.
Okay. For me, I would like to know a little bit more like what you're going to do with
okay.
like Aspen, and it's
okay.
I'm not looking for a book. I'm just like I just need to know what that means.
Okay. Yeah, I can do that. I understand.
And if I'm going to do help in the eval next year, I can say, yeah, Roy did this and he did a damn fine job, and we're good to go. You know,
yeah.
I mean that's
okay.
what I'm accustomed to.
Okay. Doing. Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. So, Roy, have you made the comments relative to this, and is the board confident and willing to sort of come to a consensus on this pay raise. That's the sort of algorithm right now in my mind.
Okay.
Mark?
Yep, I'm fine.
Okay, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Ron?
I've been good with it, yes.
I'm beyond good. Okay. If we can springboard into what I would characterize as the meat of the closed session, I'm going to ask that Roy could provide us with a brief overview of the issues that are surrounding the current well drilling attempt at Cobabe and contractual issues that are surfacing that may tie into Paul Hurst, the billing, contract fulfillment, additional litigation, all that sorts of things. And so, Roy, if you can just get us up to date informationally on what's going on there and the legal challenges that we're almost certainly going to have to face.
Okay. So as you all know, and you've probably seen some of the emails, we finished testing the well and pumping it, doing the test pump, and we sent out our water quality samples have been taken and sent for the labs to be tested. The water quality looks good. Turbidity is okay. It looks like to me there's a lot of iron in it. Our production on that is about 33 gallons a minute, which is not much. And by the time you get your safe yield, it's two garden hoses full of water. So it's not a lot of water at this point. That's the purpose of the next meeting, is that we're going to have to really sit down and decide what to do. If you want to continue to develop that, to use it, it probably means we're also going to have to look at Pizzle Springs and develop it. It's running at about 40-something gallons a minute. It could be maybe as much as 50 gallons a minute out of it right now. It'll drop to maybe as much as 25 later in the fall. But it is a water source between the two of them. Between the two of them, it may give you enough water. You need to treat each one of them separately because they come from different places and they need to be actually treated chemically or filtered or whatever independently so that you can't be mixing those. But Mark Miller can design whatever we need to in order to utilize those resources. We could modify the Pizzle Springs, go back in and renovate those and do a better job of building the spring collection box and other things. We might increase the flow on it. And so we put in a meter. We're metering it right now to watch it. But that would give us potentially, you know, I don't know, you might end up with as much as 50 gallons a minute out of it. And that would be enough for a replacement well. And so then you would still have to build the pipeline or whatever, get up on the mountain, another $1 million that you'll spend. And decide how far to take it. Whether you go to timberline, you go clear to the top with it. So that's what we have with the well. There's as we were test pumping the well, the question came up from Mark Miller, our engineers, about so who did the test hole? Why did they not stop when they could see there was no water here? And they started looking back at the contracts. Oh, we didn't do a test hole. We just went in and drilled a well. And so we're looking back at the notes, and even Paul said, I don't want to hate to just keep bringing up Paul on this, but he said, we should not even, I don't think the state even allows you to ask for money unless you've drilled a pilot hole to see if there's any water down there so you don't spend $1 million. And evidently the test hole never got drilled. So Mark was looking through the to-do list on the bid schedule, and nothing was paid out. And talking with Zim, he said, well, we didn't do a test hole. We just drilled the 12-inch hole and, you know, probably got down there and figured out at that point there wasn't anything down there. Some water, but not enough. But they figured at that point they'd test it. Last fall, I kept asking Paul, I said, we need another set of eyes on this. And he said, no, we're fine. And I said, no, I think I want Don Barnett or Richard Scott, his guy, to come up here and watch this. So I don't feel too comfortable about this whole thing. And so he said, no, you don't need anybody else. You're just wasting money. So I went and called Don, and I said, would you send Scott Clark up there anyway and let him monitor what's going on? And I'm glad we did. It was very helpful to get, and he helped us in the development of the well and did a great job. He actually was able to monitor the well, realizing that as you pump us to a certain elevation, the water pulls in off the aquifer at a certain level on the screen and actually produces more water at that point. So we went from somewhere around 20 something to 33. And possibly the well could produce more as we continue to exercise it and develop it. It appears it's increased some since we first started. You might get it up to 40 gallons a minute, which would improve your safe yield on it. So we really don't have too much. Mark Miller's totally frustrated with it that we've gone this far. We should have stopped a long time ago. He just said, in my meeting with him last week, he was just really upset, and I asked him why, and he said, why did it ever get this far? Why didn't we stop a long time ago? I said, I don't know. So I suspected, probably thought they had a test hole, and they thought they had water. But anyway, he said, you probably ought to consider going after Paul Hurst or CRS's liability insurance, because he said it. Any engineer anywhere would have known that you shouldn't have gone this far. And he said he knows that he should not have gone this far with this project. He should have drilled the test hole. He said any expert is going to tell you in court when they're up there testifying, you should have, first thing you should have done is done the test hole, verified your supply, and then drilled your well. So he said it's clearly he's liable for that. And he said you're going to need it, because if this well doesn't work out for you and maybe it gets dry in the fall, you're going to have to spend another $1 million somewhere and go drill another well. So I mentioned it to Blake, that's a possibility. I don't know how he feels about it, but it's definitely a discussion we'll probably need to have in that July 1st meeting, is what do we do? Our engineer's recommending that we go, challenge Paul on it and pursue his insurance company, because it was a foolish mistake. He should have known better. He said that any engineer should have known better. So that's the big issue, and that's where the well's at, and we're on hold at this point. We probably are going to miss, with all this, probably going to miss a construction season again. We'll be clear into next year waiting for to develop that well. So, I don't know. So again, that's what the purpose of the meeting. We'll come back to you in that meeting with some ideas, some recommendations of how to finish developing the well, the springs, the well house, the size of the pumps and other things, and the cost of doing that. And possibly looking at some other options, maybe drill another well somewhere. Mark, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this makes me sick to think that not only does Paul Hurst double, triple bill, not deliver receivables, yada, 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 and then make a 101 engineering mistake at our expense. He needs to be sued, like, right now. Him, his insurance company, his company, that's a press to start button with Blake as far as I'm concerned. And then we've got a team assembled, if you will, that includes Roy, of course, and Mark Miller, Don Barnett, and Scott. They're going to be coming to us with a recommendation on a plan B that more likely than not will involve some further development of that well and something at Pizzelle Springs. And we need to be participatory in those discussions at the board level. But there's no doubt in my mind that Paul screwed this pooch and that we need to go after it.
Well, the other thing is, had he stopped or at least considered approaching the board, the fact there isn't much water down there, clear back in 2016 would have been then when you first started talking about it, and or the beginning of 2017, the water line projects and all the expenses there would have stopped. All the additional drilling and all this other fiasco that we've been caught up in would have stopped, and we would not have applied for additional funding from the state. Kind of moved all along anticipating that they had this figured out a long time ago. So it added all that additional expense, and it just appears to just be engineering, and it should have been stopped. The other conversation that we had with the state and some other people, in fact, Aqua Environmental, when he was there, he said, so what happened with your springs? And we told him, he said, why didn't you apply to the state and rehabilitate those for a few hundred thousand dollars? I says, well, they evidently, we weren't supposed to, or couldn't, didn't have the, they wouldn't allow us. And he said, no, that's your water supply. You just tell them, we're going to fix these and we're going to put them back online. There are no other options. And you should have been up and operating within a few months. And so that would have, you would have gone to the spring box and cleaned it. You'd have cleaned the pipes and sanitized everything. You'd have found whatever you had to do in order to get that spring running again. And your source would have been up and going. And so, it just appears that maybe there's other things we could have done. But I still think there's positive light, there still is a chance that the well produces something, Pizzle Springs produces something, maybe even the old well produces something, and you still have a supply of water. But that's something Don Barnett, Scott Clark, and Mark will be working on. And we'll just make that determination of what those costs are going to be like. I don't know if it's something that you'll want to bring up at this point, Mark, but back a month or two ago, we were looking at this thinking there wasn't any water. We got talking about getting water possibly out of the Hidden Lake well or doing something with the developer. I contacted the state. The state said they would not participate in anything that was had to do with a developer. They would not let us use any funds for anything like that. So any part of that's off the table if we end up using loan funds. However, we did talk about the possibility of taking water out of Hidden Lake and made the ERCs, whether it was permanent or temporary or whatever, in order to do something to make up the difference for a period of time. But I don't know that all the board members feel positive about that. It brings its own set of challenges. I don't know. Comments about it, Mark.
Yeah.
Bob and I talked about it yesterday or day before yesterday. I can't remember. I'm losing track of days. But, I'm looking at it that I've seen Pizzle Springs as low as 15 gallons a minute. We've all seen that well produce basically nothing in a drought year. And I looked at it and I just said, okay, is there a solution where we can, as a developer, where we have known wet water, basically just get reimbursed for whatever the district's contribution would be on an ERC basis to buy 100 GPM out of our existing source. Mm-hmm. And then you're not investing in speculative risk that we may be able to rehabilitate the springs, and then you've still got the conveyance, and even if we did rehabilitate an existing line and make that work, at the minimum we're probably still in at $500,000, and we don't know what we've got, and it's going to be unpredictable in a drought year. Yeah. I mean, I just come at it from the standpoint as I'd rather have something that's a known source than something that's unknown. But I understand, I mean, Bob and I have, he's got concerns about whether Bloomington and Hidden Lake are going to have interference, but I think that's going to be to a degree where it's plus or minus, worst case scenario, 20%. Where, this could really, in a severe drought year, the complex at Cobay and Pizzle could go to zero.
Yeah.
And I feel, from a fiduciary responsibility as a board, we've already, hopefully we can recover something through, legal pressure or even litigation if it has to go that way. But, we've already wasted $1 million. I would rather invest in something that's a known source. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. So,
well, I want to wait until we hear from the experts before I make any decision or even lean anyway. I want to hear from Barnett and Miller and crew. And but the part about CRS I find is troubling. And I don't know what your take on it is, Blake.
So my take is this, that if you're going to get involved in that kind of litigation, you've got to be committed to it, because you're going to be bringing it, and CRS is not going to just roll over and say, yep, we were wrong here, and we committed basically malpractice, and we're going to, pay you our policy limits. Like, I mean, they're not going to do that.
It's insurance is not going to do it either.
Their insurance is not going to do that. So you just have to be committed to it, and by committed, that means not only you as a board, but the engineer's got to be committed to it. Mark Miller's got to be committed to it and willing to testify, and willing to line up the expertise that we need to be able to prove our case that, as an engineer, this is outside their scope. They should have known this and they didn't, and they should have advised you of this and they didn't, and they should have drilled this, 12-inch hole and tested it and they didn't, and therefore they should be responsible for this. But as long as everyone's committed and everyone has that understanding, it sounds like a pretty strong case to me.
What about costs or litigating that? Of course, you can recover your legal costs possibly if you win. If you don't, it could be fairly costly, right?
You're going to be fronting all those costs. I mean, it's not like CRS is going to be paying your costs of bringing that litigation until the end. Like, if you're successful, the payoff will be there, but you have to be successful, and that means fronting litigation costs.
Are there arbitration intersections in this pathway, or is this an automatic? I mean, it depends upon their perspective, but in your experience, Blake?
So that would be dependent upon the agreement that you have with CRS, and I'd have to go through that full agreement.
And
I'm sure, choice of law will be, addressed in that contract, and whether there's an arbitration clause will be addressed there as well, so.
Okay. Well, I'm committed. I mean, this is big dollars. This is a, I plead legal incompetence, but I can certainly smell engineering incompetence. And this is a ridiculous situation. And quite honestly, this is classic CRS above all else, above our district, above the people in our district. And it's just ridiculous. And we have to go after this. What does the other board members feel? Mike, Mark, Don, Ron?
I'll go first. I want to hear from, again, from our experts, because I don't know what they're going to say. Will CRS be able to argue that since it was next to Pizzle Springs and we're drilling there? I just don't know the arguments that can be made. And until I hear from them, Bob, I would like to just keep my powder dry.
So in preparation, I wasn't planning on attending today's meeting, but my recommendation would be just give that some thought, know that you need to be committed. I mean, the engineers are going to come in with their proposal to how to get water and give you their expertise. I mean, I'm not an engineer. I don't know whether this is outside, whether this is a breach of their professional conduct in the way they carried out this contract. That's for another engineer to tell you. But I will look at the contract and see what avenue we have, whether it's going to be arbitration or whether it's going to be litigation, and be ready to advise you of that. But you just need to be ready and be committed. If you're, if at that special meeting on the first, you decide to pull the trigger, it's being committed.
Is CRS the deep pockets here? If something happens to Paul, are we sure that this is a CRS thing and not Paul is our engineer making bad decisions?
Well, the contract that you
in
have,
other words,
the contract you have is with CRS.
Okay, but is there an arm's length situation? I'm just trying to come up with things that really stick in my mind. Paul was technically our engineer. CRS worked under his direction. Okay. Was this strictly Paul telling CRS? Is there an artificial break point there that CRS can tap dance out of this?
I think again, your agreement, Paul may have been your individual engineer, but it was really CRS that you contracted with. So CRS CRS is going to be on the hook. I mean, you can sue Paul individually, but he's not going to be your deep pocket. CRS is going to be your deep pocket.
Okay.
Was it, in fact, a line item to do that pilot hole, or?
It was. Item number 4 was to do the pilot hole.
And how was it? Did we pay?
No.
No, did we
pay? We didn't pay on it.
We didn't pay on it. But it was a line item.
What my understanding from Mark Miller is, and talking to Zim, is they decided they would just drill. They're supposed to put, a 6-inch test hole, and they decided to do a 12-inch hole and just call that the test hole and the drills all at once.
Who's they?
Paul and probably Zimmer.
Is there a chance that Paul can blame Zimmer?
I don't think so. That was something Paul had to have made the choice. I'm sure Zimmer would have done whatever he's told, but they must have somehow made that choice together, or Paul gave him that direction. He was the managing engineer. He had the contract to manage that project.
Absolutely.
And what about the contract with Zimmer? Was the pilot hole ever mentioned?
I mean, it's in the contract. It's in the bid items, bid list.
For Zimmer.
And so it was $159,000 to drill that, and they made the conscious choice not to. So Zimmer was taking $159,000, I'm sure. But so
what kind of time frame? What can you put this in perspective? Because I don't understand when these decisions were made. When was the decision, do you think, made not to do the test hole and just to do the big hole?
I really don't know. I think it's probably the end or somewhere around 2017, end of 2017, when they were getting the contract put together, deciding how to get up there and get going. And then they came in the spring of 2018, and that's when they just got mobilized, got up to the snow melted, and they started drilling. Mm-hmm. And so some discussion had to have gone in between then, between when they got the contract was issued and they actually started the work. At that point, they must have had the discussion to go ahead and just bypass it.
Did we go back through the meeting minutes? Because for some reason, I remember this as a discussion.
Oh, I've gone. That's how we realized what was said. And yeah, I've gone through all the meeting minutes, and I've still got the recordings. I told him we may have to listen to the recordings.
What do you remember?
I remember vaguely that Paul said he wasn't going. He was just going to drill the full size hole, believing that it would be more cost effective, and the water was going to be present.
And did the board approve that, or?
I don't remember that.
I don't know that it was,
have to listen to him because we went through the meeting minutes.
I think it was approval. I think it was more that that's what his plan was.
That's what his plan was, because we pulled the minutes that said, we can't get the funding until the test hole has been done. And we pulled those minutes, and I went every month after that to see what the conversations was, and there was nothing in a conversation that said that. But that's when I looked at Roy and said, we may have to listen to these again. I have everything.
Yeah,
and we've gone through the meeting minutes for the last 3 years.
Yeah, and maybe I'm imagining things, but I've really seen, and maybe that was on our end. We might have done the same thing, and that might have been a conversation we had internally. So, yeah.
We got to know that before we go forward.
Right, and that's what, like I said, we've already gone through the minutes, and I've pulled everything, but we may just have to listen to them again.
Did you guys do a pilot hole up at Hidden Lake?
I don't think we did for the second one, because when we got the bid I wasn't around for the first one, so I don't know. But for the second one, when we got the bid, because of the depth, it was so expensive to do a test well that we made the determination we just take the risk and we would just do the full-size boring. And use that as the test. We wouldn't develop it if there were, I mean, I think our incremental cost was only like $200,000 at risk to do the full-size boring over the test well. And if it didn't produce, it didn't produce, and we would just cap it and move on.
Okay. It might have been the same mindset that he had about.
Yeah, but the thing is that we all knew in the fall of 18, as well, wasn't producing yet, he kept pushing it forward. You know, he developed the well. That's, in my mind, that's the liability. Because I remember too another conversation that, and this may have just been an individual conversation with him saying, why are we pushing forward with this expense when we're, best case scenario, you're telling me we're going to get 25 gallons a minute. And then he quickly revised his story. I remember that too, because 25 gallons a minute went to 80. I think we're going to get 80.
That's exactly right.
Mark, I'm trying to piece together my recollection and focusing on the development. There was an original test hole done way out towards the village that failed, and then the test hole that had sort of proved Hidden Lake also proved Bloomington. You guys went deep on that one test hole. That one test hole evaluated the superficial aquifer that's currently Hidden Lake and the deep aquifer that's currently Bloomington, and appropriate test data was generated from there that supported going to production. in both of those holes.
Gotcha.
So as a comparison, we didn't do that.
Yeah.
I don't have a specific recollection of any board conversations and certainly no approvals for skipping the test well. No. I can tell you there was confidence, basically, that there was water there somewhere, but, you know, the contract speaks for itself. There a test pole should have been done, and this strikes me as engineering malfeasance, malpractice, whatever you want to call it, and we'll wait for our experts, Ron, and keep our powder dry. But today, I appreciate the informational stuff that we're hearing from everybody, and this is going to require an all-hands-on-deck situation for the board, because right now, the district is a water district essentially relying on developers' water sources, okay? And that's not a good or enviable situation, and we need to proceed rapidly and not let anything interfere with our focus towards getting water up that hill. So that's my tirade, if you will.
Is there any way to have, I don't know if there's any relevance in it, but is there any way to have Mark review the screen placement decision that Paul made prior to July 1st meeting?
Yeah, yep, I think he could. He actually considered that, and he and Don Barnett and Scott Clark looked at that heavily to determine why they did what they did, and then they looked at the drilling tailings to see if they were placed in the right place for the right reasons. So,
and did they feel that they were, yeah, the screen placements were accurate?
Yeah, they felt like they were. The problem is as they drilled, there were. Well, I remember there was no place where they found gravels enough to really produce any water all the way down.
Yeah.
And that's what became troubling, is like you're just going through stuff that's like glass. There can't be a lot of water coming through this stuff.
Yeah.
It should stop.
I remember just watching that as I was driving down the road each day, that the sediments were really fine that were coming out of that drill hole, and I thought that's not a good sign.
No indication of sands anywhere.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then they got down into the quartzite, and they said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, you're digging in straight quartzite for 100 feet or so. You're not going to get anything else. You're into that formation now. That's quartzite for hundreds of feet. There's nothing in quartzite, I can tell you. Not, I don't know a lot, but there's nothing in quartzite. That's like trying to run water through glass. It just doesn't work. So, but the one thing that was a little bit troubling for me is we were looking through the minutes is Paul's comment that if you don't do the test hole, you should not be applying for funding. The state won't give you funding. And I'm sitting there thinking, how do we get funding without that test hole? That was
right.
A prerequisite to even going after money. It's embarrassing to think that we've acquired funding from them and gotten this far into it without them either verifying it or Paul saying, hey, yeah, we did this due diligent item. And that was the trigger for them to decide to loan us money. And they loaned us the money without that being done. So I think that's a problem myself. But
would they do that? Would they loan us money without?
I think they missed it. I think the state missed it too. May have just told them, "Hey, we drilled the test hole and the kind of like Mark was saying, the test hole and the hole all at once."
Do they have minutes of Paul going? Who went and asked for the money for the well?
I think it was initiated back in 2017. The process was started. I remember the loan documents. I started in March of 2018, and most everything was pretty well underway. I don't know. Do you remember? You guys remember?
CRS.
CRS went and did the
initiated,
got the money.
That, yeah.
So there was a meeting where they. Probably, could somebody have testified to a test hole or the fact that there's water there? And would those meeting minutes be available for us to look at?
We can talk to Ben and find out.
Because we have to have all that. If we're going the Blake route, we got to have this. We got to be locked down tight.
Yeah. And I think that's a worthwhile thing to find out. I mean, either the state missed it, or there was a misrepresentation made by CRS.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. If there was a misrepresentation made by CRS, we need to know that.
Right.
Because if that's actually accurate and that they would not provide the funding,
Then we got to think about what potential liability there is with respect to the district. Mm-hmm. And if we were informed that as a board, if the board was informed that, and then ultimately we knew that there was no test hole drilled, and we got funding and proceeded to move forward, we don't want the state to say, hey, you committed fraud here to get the funding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we need to know what happened there in that exchange.
Exactly.
I'll call Ben tomorrow and get the paperwork from him.
Okay. You will get a copy of the application?
I think I have a copy of the application because it was done by Gina, his daughter-in-law that does all the funding for CRS. Yeah. And so as far as that, but any paperwork that was done through Ben or any of the conversation, or you know what I mean, if there was anything that was presented, he would have it.
Yeah, and then we need to find out if indeed that is a requirement. It was just a comment Paul was making in the meeting that we picked up on, but whether it's actually a requirement of the state, and if it was, and how'd we miss it?
Right. What concerns me now is if they call the test hole, if in fact there's no specific guidelines on a test hole being 4 or 6 inches, could it be the 12 inch, and that's what they call the test hole, then they could say they drill the test hole.
That's what they could. They could, just like, I think like Mark said, they may have just chosen that to be the test hole, and maybe felt like he found enough moisture in what he saw to say there's water there, whatever the quantity is. And yeah, I think it's dangerous. It's the whole thing's a little bit dangerous because, just like Blake said, you know, it's all based on the engineer could say, I felt there was enough there. How could you dispute that?
Well, and then it's going to be really critical to have what the representations were that he made to members of the board. Like, if Mark can remember him specifically saying, oh, I think we're going to get 80 mm-hmm. gallons per minute out of there. And if he was making representations along those lines, the other board members to instill confidence that this was worth moving forward on, mm-hmm. all that stuff's going to be important evidence.
Well, I mean, I think he said that in a meeting. I mean, that, mm-hmm. I don't think that was...
Yeah,
no, I think I've got that. I think I actually have that in meeting minutes where it states that.
Yeah.
Like I said, I went through the last, from 2016 when I started in July to present after until he was done, I went through every one of those meetings and I pulled all the minutes that had anything to do with the conversation in the well, and you know, about anything like that, like, and if it's not in the meeting minutes, I have the recordings, and you know, because there's certain things that you just you know subtitle whatever, so we've got the minutes if we need to go back and listen to them, but we do have the minutes pulled.
Well, you could say that
having the board, having the board members maybe review the minutes mm-hmm. where the well would be probably a good starting point. So I mean, the more information they have coming into the July 1st meeting, I think the
right.
more informative that conversation is going
to
be.
I can pull them, okay. and I can give you guys access to, if you want to listen to them, and I can give you access to the paper, the minutes that I did. If you want to listen to the recordings, I can give you all that.
What's
just
that,
let me know what you want,
state?
And we'll forward it to
yeah.
you, because it's all right there electronically.
I'll check my emails and text messages, too. I remember the last conversation when I was giving him a bad time for us letting Zim go. And that fall, and I said, do not get letting go. We need to keep him stay here and do the test pump. And he said, well, he's going to leave anyway. He didn't like the weather. I said, no, he's not going to go. Kevin, stay. Well, anyway, I said, there is no water in there, Paul. We need to know. And he said, well, if there's not, I'm in a lot of trouble. I said, well, there's nothing there. I watched the test morning of that, but I don't know if I texted him some of that.
Did, when you sent, I guess it's Barnett's guys up.
Uh-huh.
To monitor, did they raise any red flags at all with you?
Yeah, I believe he did.
Do we have anything in writing? Or?
Yeah, Scott Clark, we have the emails from him.
Okay.
He was saying there's nothing there. There, I think they could see they're struggling, drilling through all that hard surface, and that there's, the formations are not the right type to get water out of.
Do you remember where you had that conversation where he said he's in a lot of trouble?
I think I'm, I don't know if I've got notes on it. I remember distinctly telling him that. I think I was in a truck with him, but it might have been just conversation. I said, I'll look at text messages and emails and see if there's anything, but I think it was just conversations, and I kept saying, there's nothing in there but about 10 gallons a minute. And he said, no, that can't be right. I said, no, those guys know what they're doing. And I was up there too, and I watched them as they're pulling that swab back out, or they call it a pig, but they're pulling it back up. And typically those will go all the way down. The screen will let the water dump into it, and then they'll pull it back up, and it'll just push water, and it'll surge out and blow shoot out the end of the pipe. They were doing that, and the water was coming out and dropping about that far out the end of the pipe, and it looked like maybe 2 gallons a minute. And those guys said, that's a dry hole. So, like, I think you're right. There's nothing.
Oh, they did say that at that
time? Yeah, the workers did. They said nothing down there. That thing's dry. And I watched, he said, you might be lucky to get 10 gallons a minute out of it. So that's what I told Paul. There's nothing in there. And he said, no, we're in trouble if there isn't.
Can we go after them from the time that the well drillers discovered there was no water to now? Or what?
If you go after him, you're going after him. I mean, full bore that he should have known as an engineer that this was a dry hole, that he didn't follow the normal practices of an engineer and doing the test hole. You're going to go after him for all those things.
So maybe that's the play is going after him,
but if you're going to go after him, you got to be committed. I mean, because you're talking about fronting a pretty expensive piece of litigation. Like, I mean, that's filing the complaint. That's doing a lot of I mean, they're going to push to do discovery, and the big expense you're going to have is with experts.
Mm-hmm. And electronic discovery that
right.
gets expensive.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
he's, you know, I mean, and so that's just. It's going to be expensive, and so you just have to be committed to it.
So the big question in all this is, after we get all done with that, do we get anything out of it, or are we better off to focus all our money and attention and doing something else?
I think your experts are going to be able to tell you whether this is a good case or not. Like, I mean, if the experts are going to say he absolutely should have known, he should have drilled this test hole, he should have known right from the get-go that this was a bad location. He shouldn't have pushed, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, but that's what Mark's going to have to say, and he's going to have to be committed to that.
And I think that's going to be a tough ask, because you've got an existing well there plus a active spring there. It's going to, trying to get them to say that this was a bad location.
And as a layperson, I saw that too. I was looking at it.
There was a geologic survey that was 5 stars on likelihood of water.
Yeah.
At that location.
So maybe the location's not the big one, but I mean, at some point, whether he should have known or not known, I mean, that's really what Mark's got to be able to say. It's like he should have known at this point and should have stopped this instead of having you spend another $600,000.
Which I think was a topic of discussion in one of the board meetings, or maybe several, where we talked about incredibly low yield, initial yield. Do we continue to spend the money to try to develop as well? And then at that point, nothing should have been done for trying to design and develop a conveyance system until we actually knew there was water there. You know, at that point, that should have just gone on hold.
How long do you think the lawsuit would take?
That kind of lawsuit depends on how hard he wants to fight.
Give or take 3 months. If you had to guess.
3 months?
give or take
a year?
Oh, give or take 3 months? It's going to take years.
Years. Yeah. And what's the statute on something like that? How long?
Depends on what kind of cause of action. If it's breach of contract, I think it's 3 years. If it's fraud, I think it's 4 years. So from the time that, you know, he committed the fraud, I mean, it depends on what cause of action is the statute of limitations.
So does it start when he should have pulled the plug,
it starts when you file the lawsuit, though. So if you file the lawsuit, then, I mean, if it's a breach of contract, it's whenever he breached the contract. If we're saying his breach of the contract was at this point when he had this conversation with you and he convinced you to continue to move forward, and you took him as the managing engineer of this project at his word, he breached the contract right there, then
that's the statute.
That's so the statute starts running from that day to the day you file.
So we've already lost a year?
Mm-hmm. Plus, because they gave Zim Industries all through the winter to wait to do anything, wait till spring to come back to do some work, and so we lost several months.
Is there any way to just file a claim with his insurance company?
File a claim with his insurance company?
Forego the legal procedures. File a claim for.
He has to file the claim.
He has to file the claim.
Yeah. We would have to put him on notice, and he would have to make a decision. Usually, what happens is we would file some type of notice. He would put his carrier will notice,
yeah.
and then they would lawyer up right away with a claim this size. I mean,
they're not gonna
just roll over and pay.
Well, let them lawyer up.
Yeah.
So you send us basically a demand letter, and then at that point he's gonna tender that to his insurance. They're gonna, you know, Mr. Jenkins is probably not gonna be legal counsel in this case. It'll be whoever's insurance company has.
So, Blake, insurance companies have risk management departments and smart guys. If they see a strong demand letter with really pretty clear-cut reporting documentation, they're going to have people independently review that, and they may just acknowledge that their legal costs are going to be severe and that they're going to ultimately have to pay a lot more than the actual payout.
Sure.
Is that a reasonable expectation in this kind of action in your experience?
Yes, and it really depends on the insurance company. I mean, all insurance companies have different kind of standards with respect to that, as far as, you know, some of them are really beholden to their clientele because they're in a niche market and there's only so many people they can insure. And so they know that they, if their client wants to fight it, that they better fight it or else they're going to lose them as a customer.
But
in essence, yes, that's right. I mean, they'll make a business decision.
Do we know who their insurance company is? Like the one looking at you?
Oh.
The other thing is.
No, I don't.
CRS. I mean, it seems like Paul has a lot of power in CRS itself, mm-hmm. and it's not like a small engineering firm. It's a 90 to 100 person engineering firm. So.
Is there a way to find out who their insurance company is and then research them? I'm just trying to figure out if there's a better use for our short-term money to find water.
Yeah.
And then fight the battle later. But, I mean, still make the threat now, get that ball rolling, let them scramble, but we still need water.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the scary part is somehow we've got to be looking for a water source or doing something.
I spoke to a guy.
Too much attention on this and forget
we're not
going to
solve it today.
Well, I spoke to the guy that was. I talked to Roy about this. I don't know if it's a wrong time for this, but I spoke to a guy that was actually doing the testing, not the Clark guy, but the gentleman that worked for Zimmer. And I'm still perplexed why the spring water is just going right by there. I think there's an issue with the screens. He said there's a system in Fresno where they take spring water and reintroduce it through sand filtration back into the water table, back into the well, and then you pump it back out.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, and or you can just filter it on the surface once we get it out. So there's no question we can use the water out of Pizzle Springs. It's just a matter of treating it.
I've been obsessed with the whole thing. I've been thinking.
But there's also then that the Wolf Creek claim on some type of bypass flow there too.
Yeah, there's mitigation. We'd have to complete our exchange application and mitigate their demand on it. So, but we were talking about doing that anyway. But we just have to learn to shut it down. If not, turn it off on during the irrigation season. But the exchange application is ready to go. We can file that too and get going on it. But that's costly. It's
okay.
$30,000.
Yeah. It sounds to me like we've got a reasonably codified approach and at least are informed at this point. How are we doing on process, on time for the meeting? Are we
on the process for what?
The meeting. Are we prepared to come out of closed session? Do you want more discussion? You want to, what are the next steps mm-hmm. that you need the boards involved in?
My question that I think I posed to you the other day on the phone, but we're going to, Don Guerre and I are going to try to put together our thoughts, have that for the July 1st meeting, and then it would be great if the engineers can bring, so we have complete visibility into all options, and we understand as a board, so all options are on the table, and we understand what the actual costs are, and what the actual results are.
Mark, Don, and Scott will all be here.
Great.
Yeah,
great.
And they already know their task with mm-hmm. getting that ready and having some solution of some type to do something with the existing well sources.
Yeah. Yep.
They've already told us that.
So,
well.
I can't hear you.
We're ready to come out of closed session.
Okay. I need a a motion to request to reconvene the public meeting.
I move that we reconvene the public meeting.
I second the motion.
I need a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.